Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to One Up Delivery Through the AI podcast channel. I'm your host as usual, Guy, and joining me is Carl. How you doing, Carl?
Not too bad, Guy. How about yourself?
I'm good. Look at us. What, just three in a row?
Yeah, three in a row. And counting. Look at us.
And hopefully the THQ thing isn't awful next week or this week. We had four in a row. But we'll wait and see. But I'm guessing everyone knows why we're here. We're going to review the PlayStation event, which was, well, was very up and down in extreme measures. But we'll do the news quickly beforehand. And the first story, Carl, is a continuation, I should say, of one that we discussed last week.
Yeah, so Tripwire boss steps down after heavily criticized Texas anti-abortion law tweet. And this comes from Wesleyan Poole over Eurogamer. And Wesley writes, "The boss of Tripwire Interactive has stepped down after he said he was, quote, proud, end quote, a draconian Texas anti-abortion law was allowed to stand. Last week, John Gibson, president of the Chivalry 2, Killing Floor and Maneater publisher, tweeted to say he, quote, felt it was important to go on the record as a pro-life game developer, end quote. Now, Tripwire has issued a statement condemning Gibson's comments and confirming he had stepped down as CEO, with co-founder and current vice president Alan Wilson taking over in the interim. Here's the statement in full. Quote, the comments given by John Gibson are of his own opinion and do not reflect those of Tripwire Interactive as a company. His comments disregarded the values of our whole team, our partners, and much of our broader community. Our leadership team at Tripwire are deeply sorry and are unified in our commitment to take swift action and to foster a more positive environment. Effective immediately, John Gibson has stepped down as CEO of Tripwire Interactive. Co-founding member and current vice president Alan Wilson will take over as interim CEO. Alan has been with the company since its formation in 2005 and is an active lead in both the studio's business and developmental affairs. Alan will work with the rest of the Tripwire leadership team to take steps with employees and partners to address their concerns, including executing a company-wide town hall meeting and promoting open dialogue with Tripwire leadership and all employees. His understanding of both the company's culture and the creative vision of our games will carry the team through this transition with full support from the other Tripwire leaders." And you can read the full story over on Eurogamer. So, Guy, we kind of predicted there was going to be a backlash, and that's exactly what we've seen.
Yeah, absolutely. We mentioned, well, basically, we said if you have these views, for whatever reason, whether it's religion, you're just a bit weird, or whatever, you really shouldn't be sharing them in an industry that is, what did we say, liberal leaning, left leaning. Probably more liberal, you'd probably say. Yeah. It was just a really stupid thing. And this dude, John Gibson's obviously screwed his career up, doing it. It just shows what a hotbed topics like this are. And obviously, this is a gaming podcast. But when someone in the gaming industry does stupid stuff like this, it's a potential career ruiner. So yeah, it's just a continuation from last week. He's an idiot.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about how in general, you know, speaking out as pro-life in this industry is risky. Now, whether you feel that's right or wrong, I mean, obviously there's an argument to be made that, that people deserve their freedom of speech and deserve to have their own views and voice them, and we understand that. But just given the balance, you know, that as you said, that this industry is very liberal leaning, it is risky. But I think particularly the timing, whatever, if any, you know, random day he came out and said he was pro-life, but to choose to do it at this point in the shadow of this
blizzard
controversial
and stuff.
Law, you know, and I think what the difficulty here is, I mean, some might even argue that this law isn't completely pro-life, given that, you know, it's not outlawed abortion completely, it's just up until 6 weeks. But also I think that the controversy largely lies with the measures related to people being monetarily rewarded for reporting on people who have abortions. Illegal abortions. So that's really what it relates to. So I think when you put it in that context, it makes this decision even more bizarre. It was inevitably going to have this backlash, and I'm not shocked at all that this is what's happened and that he's had to ultimately step down. And I think it'll make the next person who thinks of saying something so controversial on a public platform think twice when they're in a similar position.
Yeah, and I think it, obviously with this law being approved, is that the right word? I don't bloody know. But we've seen the, I don't know, word this, women's rights, women's safety, stuff like that. We've seen that, especially in 2021. Obviously, it's been a much more long-standing thing in their lives, obviously, but we've seen so much come to light in the recent months, if not years, and stuff like that. So yeah, considering the image of the gaming industry, and where not all women are obviously pro-choice, some are pro-life and stuff like that, but it just continues the bad luck about the women's rights in gaming. I'm trying to say very clumsily, but yeah, it's a bit of a strange one. It is a strange one, but yeah, I'm sure, as we say, I'm sure there is people in the industry who are pro-life, are right-wing and stuff like that. And, well, be it not, well, in my opinion, there is something wrong with being right-wing, because I'm left-wing, but you have the choice to be right-wing. But it's, as we say, the gaming industry is, it's not one, especially surrounding stuff like this, it's not one to openly celebrate. It's not something like that. It's not something you celebrate, is it, really? You can debate around it, but you shouldn't celebrate shit like that.
No, it's interesting that you kind of look at the like call to attention, the focus on women's rights in regards to the industry at the moment. Anyway, I hadn't even thought about it in that context. I mean, it already when you look at it that way, it feels like we're already in a bit of a, you know, we're things are already stirring up a little bit, let's say. So I think obviously this, someone in the games industry having such a reaction to a controversial law that further impacts women's rights, at least in the case of the state of Texas, it was inevitably going to blow up. So that is a good point that you made. I think I said last week, and I'll say it again, I think people just need to think before they tweet. You know, when you type out a tweet, you know, kind of give it a look over and see, is the, when you're in that kind of a position of power as he was, you know, you just have to think twice, because I think if people take that moment to think twice, they might end up erasing that tweet and never tweeting it.
Yep, and then we would never have talked about this, and that dude would still have his job. Yada, yada, yada. But, yeah, idiot. Moving on, I'll do the next one. Sony buys Firesprite, the studio behind The Playroom. This is from Polygon by Austin Goslin. Sony has added another developer to its PlayStation Studios lineup. On Wednesday, Sony announced that it has acquired Firesprite, a Liverpool-based studio that has worked with Sony several times in the past. Several of Firesprite's members were formerly part of Sony Interactive Entertainment Studio Liverpool, making this a return to Sony for many at the studio. Firesprite was founded in 2012 and has since developed a number of games for Sony PlayStation consoles. Firesprite's previous games include The Playroom and The Playroom VR, Run Sackboy Run, as well as horror game The Persistence. Earlier this year, Firesprite announced that it has been working with Cloud Imperium Games on Star Citizen Theatres of War, a multiplayer game mode that will combine many different types of combat from Star Citizen. Sony and Firesprite's announcement of this acquisition did not mention Theatres of War or any specific upcoming projects. The announcement does include a statement from Firesprite's managing director, Graham Ankers, which mostly focuses on the relationship that Firesprite and Sony have had so far, with a few clues as to what might be in the studio's future. This is the second major addition to Sony's PlayStation Studios so far this year. In June, Sony acquired Returnal developer Housemarque. A month later, in July, Sony added Nixes. Let's go with Nixes, a studio that worked on Marvel Avengers and several recent Tomb Raider games to the PlayStation Studio rosters as well. Now, Carl, what does this mean for you? Because I've not played any of them games they've made, but obviously, if I look at this through the lenses of an Xbox person, Xbox has a shed load of studios, but PlayStation seems to be quality over quantity. That's not bad-mouthing Xbox's ones, but PlayStation seems to be very particular when acquiring a studio.
Yeah, I mean, when I first read about this, I mean, it didn't really do too much for me because I was, you know, on the surface of it, it seemed that Firesprite were just a team that they collaborated with Japan Studio on the Playroom and the Playroom VR, and they also developed the Persistence, which was on PSVR. So it seemed like this was a studio that were very much niche in their VR focused and, you know, peripheral focused. So to be honest, it didn't excite me too much. But having read into them further, I think it's a really intriguing acquisition, and I think it makes a lot of sense. I mean, it makes a lot of sense in the way in which it's a studio that Sony have worked with. I mean, a lot of their employees came from Sony Liverpool, which is, you know, Sony have closed a lot of studios, well, a few studios, let's say, in the past 20 years. But the one I think that probably shocked people the most was Sony Liverpool. I mean, they had been around forever. They were the team behind Wipeout, which was one of the synonymous PlayStation IP. I mean, it just seemed a real surprise when they closed them down. So in a way, it's kind of nice that it's come full circle and they've brought their successor studio in under the roof at PlayStation. And then in terms of why it's intriguing, is this is a studio that they're not a small studio, you know, as you might expect on the surface of the announcement and the games they've worked on, that it might be maybe a studio of 50-60 people. They have over 250 employees, and Herman Holst, obviously head of PlayStation Studios, talked about this acquisition a little bit following the announcement. And he suggested that the projects, and he emphasized multiple projects that Firesprite have on the go, that they bring something that Sony doesn't currently have on their PlayStation Studios. They're different kind of games. And he seemed that the very vague descriptions that he seemed to give seemed to refer to a couple of games. one of which who people believe is VR related, which makes sense given the impending PSVR 2, and the other which seemed to be a multiplayer title, which again is something that PlayStation Studios lack. So it feels like they're filling in holes, as you said, Guy, trying to play catch up with Xbox. They're never going to have as many studios as Xbox, but if they can have kind of the quality and have a lot of different genres covered, I mean, that would be seen as a success, I'm sure.
They seem to be adding more teams into them, into the ones already there, Anna. What is it? Insomniac's up to four now, isn't it? And isn't Santa Monica, they've got a good few now, haven't they? So I think it's building within rather than extending from out, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I think obviously the as far as acquisitions go, they're only going to bring in teams and studios that, you know,
maybe
fit in with what they're
trying
to do. Yeah, I'm sure we'll be discussing that when we get to talking about the showcase. But I don't think they're going to rush to kind of pick whatever studios they can get. They're not an Embracer group here, so. I mean, I'm sure there are more acquisitions to come, possibly even before the year is out. But, you know, they're never going to be one to just suddenly announce four or five acquisitions at once. It's very methodical. And as you said, that the main focus is bringing more teams in their existing studios, and therefore they can learn from the existing teams and bring kind of the games that PlayStation gamers expect and the level of quality they're expected at. So, I mean, as I said, on the face of it's an acquisition that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the thing we've seen with Sony is that they don't get teams don't get pigeonholed, because it would have been easy for, let's say, Guerrilla just to keep making Killzone, and that could have been what they're pigeonholed into. They end up making Horizon Zero Dawn, and it's pretty damn good. So I think that's what we see a bit more. Obviously, it's early and Xbox is a lot of studios, so we might see more variety from them at times. But I think that's what we get from Sony studios. They're kind of, everything won't get greenlit, obviously. And we've seen stuff like, what's that zombie game that didn't get a sequel? Days Gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's stuff like that, but we do see teams, they always get a chance to prove themselves. And this doesn't mean that Fire Sprite won't just be stuck making Run, Sackboy, Run and stuff like that. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what how they can develop. And maybe if they do, maybe they can just build on Sackboy again, because obviously he's a, what would you call him, a cult classic? I've never bloody played it.
I'd say they were popular games, Little Big Planet. It is interesting, actually, what's happening there, because obviously Media Molecule have moved on to Dreams and are very focused on that. And therefore, the most recent Sackboy game was outsourced to an external studio, which I believe belongs to Tencent now, or one of those Chinese corporations.
Everything's owned by Tencent. That is.
This is
if
it,
it's
so.
Not Embracer Group or Microsoft, it's Tencent. That's probably not a lot, though. But anything to add on this before we move on to the news story where you have literally put it in to justify you spending €20?
What a spoiler. No, as I said, I'm just intrigued to see kind of what further moves Sony make, moving forward in terms of acquisitions. And as I said, I'm sure they'll continue to follow a similar pattern.
Right. So here we are, Carl. Would you like to tell the people and go through the story of why you have spent €20 on this gear?
Yes, so our third story, Marvel's Avengers New Roadmap, Spider-Man level cap increase, and first raid coming in 2021. And this comes from Matt Kim over at IGN. It's been 1 year since Marvel's Avengers hit the scene, and developer Crystal Dynamics released a new roadmap for the rest of 2021, with details of the first raid a power level cap increase, and of course, confirming again that Spider-Man is slated to come to PlayStation later this year. In an extensive new blog, Crystal Dynamics looks back at the year, including all the ups and downs, as well as looks towards the future, providing a glimpse at some upcoming content. First things first, yes, Spider-Man is still slated to be released sometime this year as a playable character in a new hero event exclusive to PlayStation players. Unfortunately, that's about all the details Crystal Dynamics shared today. The team also confirmed that Spider-Man or Avengers will not be showcased in this week's PlayStation livestream. The roadmap also revealed Avengers' very first raid content called Discord and Sound. The raid will come in standard power level 150 to 160 and elite modes power level 160 to 175 and will have players face Claw. The raid will conclude his story from the War for Wakanda expansion. Crystal Dynamics says the raid will be, quote, the most challenging content yet, end quote, and will test players' individual skills, four-player teamwork, and observational skills. On the quality of life side of things, Crystal Dynamics confirmed that there will be a power level cap increase coming to Avengers. However, they say the increase won't come at the expense of the gear players have already earned. Coming with the level increase, there will be a new system that lets players upgrade epic, legendary, and exotic gear from power level 100 to the new power level cap. Although the initial launch for Avengers has been rocky, Crystal Dynamics is working continuously on improving the experience and says that player feedback is the team's number one priority. And while there's still no concrete info on Spider-Man just yet, he's still slated to arrive in 2021 as per the newest roadmap. And you can get the full story over at IGN. So as Guy has alluded to, I did recently pick up Marvel's Avengers. I mean, the PlayStation 5 version is going for about 20 euros. So that's, what, maybe 17, 18 pounds?
Too much.
These days. And, I mean, there was whispers about Spider-Man still coming later this year, prior to this story breaking. So based on that, when I saw how cheap the game was, I just had to pick it up because, I mean, the idea of being able to play as Spider-Man in the game was kind of what had my interest from the start. I knew it wasn't the best game, but the idea of playing as Spider-Man in any game appeals to me, to be honest, because I'm borderline obsessed with Spider-Man.
Just go play Spider-Man again. Save yourself the hassle.
I could do that. Or pick up a few of the old PS2, PS3 Spider-Man games. But I thought I'd give this a go. I mean, as a big Marvel fan and as a big fan of Destiny in the past, you know, something that marries those two experiences is something that I can't help but check out. So I've finally jumped in. Haven't popped it in my PS5 yet. I probably will. I won't wait for the Spider-Man DLC. I'll give it a go before that. So hopefully, maybe on the next show, I'll be able to report in and give my opinions on that. I mean, but what are your thoughts here, Guy? You're someone who was an early adopter of Avengers. You got it early, and you weren't too keen. I mean, have you heard much from other people playing the game in regards to them turning things around somewhat?
No, I don't know anyone who's played it recently. I think I've only had one, maybe two. Definitely one, because I game share with him, so he got it when I unfortunately spent my own money on it. He seemed to enjoy it, but it's like enjoying a game from Xbox 360. That's just how I feel about it. It might have been proven, obviously, getting the next gen. Is it an actual upgrade, or is it just playing a PlayStation 4 game on a PS5, or is it an actual upgrade?
No, they launched a PS5. The PS5 and Xbox One or Xbox Series X versions got delayed initially, but right, they came out in the spring, so it is it does play better than the original version.
Right. Okay. Still not asked. but I mean, I've seen the DLCs that have come out Black Panther. What is the other one? Is it Hawkeye? I think there's one over us.
Yeah, that was an expansion, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, none of that dragged me or even like tempted me to even re-download the game. Which, I mean, doesn't speak volumes because there's plenty of stuff that you can't really get back into, but I don't know. I just don't... Like, you'll probably... You might understand when you play it, but I don't understand how Spider-Man's going to work into it. Unless, like, his DLC is just New York City, because... The base game, what I played, the landscapes and stuff, they don't really fit into web-slinging and stuff like that. So, unless it's going to be, like, properly redesigned for Spider-Man, or it's going to be, like, the original PlayStation games where he webs the sky. I'm not sure how it'll work entirely, but that's a problem for them. And they'll probably have to... Well, they probably will solve it, because, yeah, he's been well advertised, hasn't he? But, yeah, I think... It's just a game that I bought out of pure boredom. I can't say I was disappointed with it because I wasn't expecting much when I bought it. But, yeah, I don't think there's anything that could attract me back to that game, to be honest. Because it's just very ordinary, which is strange considering... I mean, you look at the Marvel Cinematic Universe, barring Black Widow, which is a terrible film... The films tend to be bangers. Everything around Disney stuff is bangers. I mean, just the Insomniac Spider-Man games are fantastic and stuff like this. Stuff like that. But this was just... It was a lame duck. It was crap. You may enjoy it more than I did, but I just felt it was like a dated game.
Yeah, I do get... I think, you know, from what I hear... Among kind of the gaming community, the game has slowly carved itself out, you know, an audience, particularly among console players, but it's not a particularly large audience. And I do think kind of the content they've added kind of has probably helped with that. But I do think an overarching opinion tends to be that this game is dated somewhat. You know, people feel that we kind of know that this game was supposed to be out earlier than it was. I mean, it was rumored for so long before it was announced, and then obviously got delayed after its announcement. You know, it does feel like this game was supposed to come out a couple of years ago and before, well, not a couple of years ago now, because it came out a year ago at this point, but a couple of years before its launch, and then maybe things would have been different, because it would have been a very different environment. It would have been coming out when those kind of games were,
yeah, that's a good point,
were hot properties, and then also when the MCU, well, the MCU is still very popular. I mean, I recently went to see Shang-Chi, and it's a fantastic movie. They've moved into the more obscure properties for the large part, and they've moved away from this centralized Avengers MCU, and I think if it had come out at the time when Avengers was the big deal, it would have made a big difference for this game.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think when it came out in 2020, if it came, well, not mid-gen, but the last quarter of the gen, it probably would have made more sense. But yeah, I think when a game like that goes cross-gen, you compare it to like The Last of Us 2, RDR 2, God of War and stuff like that, and you're like, yeah, it looks like you've not maxed this out. but yeah, I mean, who cares? As you say, it'll have its following. But I don't think anything will drag people back, especially that Spider-Man probably will be a... Is he confirmed as an exclusive or is he a timed exclusive?
I think he's an outright exclusive.
Yeah, so I'm getting fucked over. I'm getting completely fucked over. But yeah, so it doesn't really affect me. I can't even get fucking Wolverine anymore. It's bullshit, but we'll talk about that later. Right, last news story before we get into the Sony one, and this will be a quick one. Nintendo lowers price of base Switch model in Europe. Eurogamer Tom Phillips, yada, yada, yada. Nintendo's basic Switch model is now cheaper in the UK and mainland Europe by around £20. That makes it £259.99 or £299.99. Look at me, not knowing money. Down from £279 and £329. For comparison, the upcoming Switch OLED is set to launch at $309.99. Let's pick random numbers here, Nintendo. While the Switch Lite is $199.99. Official pricing for the console is updated on Nintendo's own store, though it is not yet reflected on other retailers such as Amazon. Nintendo Switch OLED arrives on 8th of October alongside Metroid Dread. It boasts a slightly larger screen, which has been upgraded to OLED plus 64GB of internal storage, improved speakers, and a wider adjustable stand. There have been whispers last week of an impending price drop to make way for the arrival of the OLED into the bustling Switch market, although that seemed to suggest larger cut the more marginal change in pricing seen today. Now, my first question, is it called the OLED or am I meant to say OLED?
I think either or works.
Yeah. Anyway, I was gonna say OLED, and then it sounded wrong, and I'm pretty sure it is meant to be that way. But anywho, yeah, I mean, I can't remember if were we around when this got announced, the new one. We must have been.
Yeah, we did. We I think we covered it at one point in the news. I think it was focused on the thing that rumors all along was suggesting that it was kind of more of a Switch Pro with obviously better performance and dock and that kind of thing, and that's clearly not what we're getting. This is just basically a slightly bigger, better screen and better speakers, and so it's not really any enhanced graphics power, let's say.
Yeah, I mean, we both have Switches. We think we mentioned, well, I've mentioned I probably would have got the Switch Lite if that was out when I got my Switch. I don't see what new market this drags in, but at the same time, I don't really have a connection at all to Nintendo's fan base, so maybe that just a bit more will drag in, because the Switch is what? 5 years? 4 or 5 years now? Must be.
Yeah, I mean, I was all for the idea of a Switch Pro. I thought it might give me a reason to finally dock my Switch, because I don't really dock it. As similar to yourself, more tend to stick to handheld mode. But obviously that isn't what we've got. And as we said, we spoke about that on a previous show. I'm still hemming and hawing on whether to pick up one of these OLED switches eventually, although that has more to do with the fact that would enable me to give my old Switch to someone else, and then I could pick up this. So it's not really that I'm rushing out to pick up one of these, and lucky, because I gather they're terribly supply constrained, as one would expect with a console at the moment, given the chip shortages. So I think unless you already pre-ordered one of these OLED switches, you're not going to be getting one anytime soon. But on the topic of the price drop, I mean, I'm not surprised at all that there is a price drop for the original Switch. It makes sense. You couldn't really have them kind of only, what, £10 in between the two SKUs. But I would have expected a little more, you know, maybe £40-£50 off rather than £30. I mean, what's your thoughts on the amount of the price drop?
Yeah, it seems a bit, I don't know, just unsubstantial, really. I think, I mean, you look at the difference between Series, I know it's a different situation, but you look at Series X and Series S, what's that, like 200? Maybe more.
Large enough, yeah.
Yeah, it's quite substantial. I know it's not, that is a completely different like more powerful disk drive, yada yada yada. But it's a substantial price difference. Where in this, it's I don't know. It's almost like if you're buying your kid a Nintendo Switch at Christmas, and say it's like I don't know, say it's a 7 year old, you like just give the cheap one. They're not going to appreciate that. It's like, it doesn't really matter. But yeah, I think I don't know. It just doesn't. It doesn't seem to matter. But maybe it'll flip the other way and just go. It's whatever more. How much more is it? So what is it, 60 quid? No, 50. 50 quid more. So, yeah. It's probably the nice round number, but yeah. Maybe people will just think it's 50 quid more, we'll get the better one. That's probably how I'd think.
I mean, possibly. I think really when you look at the three models of Switch now that are going to be on the market, they're very much focused on particular groups. You know, the OLED model is aimed at kind of the more hardcore gamers who play their Switch a lot and just want the slightly bigger screen and the better screen. They're going to go for that. Whereas obviously people buying Switches for their children are more likely to lean towards the Lite, given its smaller size and its no need to be docked. I mean, it is basically a 3DS successor. And then you've got in the middle ground your standard Switch, which might be more so aimed at families and the like that want the Switch, be able to put it on the TV and stuff. So it makes sense having the three different models. But as I said, I just would have expected another 10, 20 pounds to be knocked off the standard in this price drop. But I suppose this leaves room for
sales.
Retailers. Yeah. Exactly, when you're thinking of Black Friday and stuff in the months to come, for them to knock that little bit extra off, and that's might be the sweet spot for some people.
Yeah, I don't think it'll matter. I think most people probably have a Switch if they've got a gaming family. Like, I have one. I don't think I've used it in probably since Pokemon Sword and Shield. But anywho, we'll get into the PlayStation event, Carl, and before we get into the games, I've kind of already spoiled one earlier on, but overall thoughts on it from you? It's obviously, well, I appreciate the PlayStation, but it is your console.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a very good showing. Better than I was expecting. It could have been better, but these things are rarely perfect. You know, there's always going to be, and I think there's a bias involved as well. There's always going to be a couple games in any of these things that aren't really aimed at you, and they're going to be kind of, you might lose a little bit of attention, and then it'll switch to the next game, and it's something that's for you, and you're back on the edge of your seat. That's always how it's going to be. So it's never really going to be a perfect showcase. But I like the way that they respected your time with the about 45 minutes for the showcase all in all. It was just kind of game after game after game. There's very little. I think there was a little bit of talking by Jim Ryan at one point, but very early. But other than that, it was just showcasing games, which is exactly what you want from a video game showcase. So, all in all, I was really happy with the showing.
Yeah, and I think obviously not all of this is exclusive to PlayStation, so I can take stuff away from this. And I mean, well, we'll spoil it. Everyone knew God of War 2 was God of War Ragnarok was going to be there. That's the game I want to buy a PlayStation 5 for. So we've got the first thing that's tempted. Well, if I can find one, but it's the first game that's tempted me into getting a PlayStation 5. So there we are. That's probably my main takeaway from this one. But I'm sure that it has been rumbled. So I'll say surprise, but maybe want of a better word. The main surprise for me, or for some people, is Star Wars The Knights of the Old Republic remake, Carl. And I think there's two reasons why this is a surprise. Firstly, that it exists and it's ready to be, well, it wasn't really shown, but it was announced. And the second surprise is that it was on a PlayStation stage and it's We haven't really had confirmed details of it yet, but I believe it's launching on PlayStation 5 and PC. But it's a timed exclusive, so it will come to Xbox, but the game's probably that far away we won't get details on the actual timed exclusivity.
Yeah, so, I mean, we kind of knew this one was coming. I think we actually even talked about it in the podcast a few months ago. I think it was originally broken by YouTuber Matty Plays and then kind of confirmed by Jason Schreier, as all or most video game rumors tend to be. But we had kind of no clue when it was coming. And I think we never could have predicted that it would be a timed exclusive for the PlayStation, given this game's pedigree on the Xbox platform. So I think in that way, it was a massive surprise, because this wasn't the showcase we would have been expecting to see this at. I mean, obviously, we didn't see a lot. And I mean, given that, I'd expect there's still a long way to go with this game. And I think in kind of the few little interviews they done after the showcase, the developer seemed to suggest as much. So I think we'll be waiting most likely till 2023 for this one. But it's exciting all the same. I mean, Knights of the Old Republic is one of those games that I have played it for a couple hours, but I've never finished it and I've never played the second one. And that's because it's just, you know, having played more recent BioWare games and RPGs in general, it's a tough one to play. And, you know, I felt for a while I'll just force myself through it, but now I feel I don't have to, because this is coming and it kind of combines the, apparently it's going to combine the stories of both games. And so that just, it seems like it's just perfect for me. I mean, what's your thoughts on that, guy? And is this one that you're expecting to play when it eventually comes to Xbox in, you know, 2024, 2025?
Yeah, everyone will be bloody that far away, won't it? I'll play this. I'll probably wait. Hopefully have a PS5 by then, but I'll probably wait for Xbox with this one. I think it's one that was, it's always been due a remake. We always just thought maybe it'd probably be one BioWare do, considering the, I know they're only recent, but the success of Mass Effect Legendary Edition, the I'm not sure who bloody making the Dead Space one, but that looks excellent as well. But Aspyr's done a few remakes, haven't they?
They've done a lot of ports. They obviously, I think generally they're known as kind of a port studio, porting console games to PC, and more recently porting a lot of some older games to modern consoles. And they've done a lot of work with Star Wars. I think they ported like Republic Commando and I think Star Wars Pod Racer and a few others. I think a lot of the Star Wars games have come to modern consoles recently, and I'm pretty sure Aspyr have done them all. Just double checking now, but they generally are a port studio, though. That's their main function. So this is kind of their first game of their own, and it's not even really a game of their own, so to speak. So they've ported as well a lot of they actually ported the old Republic games to Linux. Like they report PC games to other computer platforms, so like they have been very much involved in Star Wars in recent years. So it's kind of fitting that they'd be the one to take this on, and it's exciting for them that they're getting to do something other than kind of port or remaster existing games. I mean, I know it's a remake, but that's certainly a step up. And
yeah,
I think we've seen with Bluepoint that you can really make a name for yourselves, even if it is just remakes that you make, because I mean, it is a remake, but it's effectively a new game in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean, it's not exactly something I don't know, we joked about Last of Us getting remade the last week, didn't we? You can take stuff from the original Last of Us because it's still a modern game, whereas you look at the original KOTOR, that is a potato of a game now, as you alluded to, trying to replay it. It's basically a completely new game. You're probably going to have to do new voice recordings and stuff like that. So it is basically a new game, just with source material. That's basically it. Whereas, Last of Us probably is the best example, because we joke, why does that need a remake? It's not even old. It's one of BioWare's, I don't know, it's been one of the most highly sought after remakes, you'd probably think, because you can go back and play it, but you kind of don't want to. It's not made about a graphic snob or anything like that, but games from that era are just, they're just difficult to play.
They really are. I mean, I think that particular era, I think kind of if we go, say, two generations, kind of the PS1 and then the PS2, Xbox, GameCube era, I think maybe with the exception of certain GameCube exclusives, you know, like your Mario Kart and stuff, I think they're kind of timeless.
Yeah.
But I think most other games from those eras are really hard to play. They feel like frozen in time. I think if you go from kind of Xbox 360, PS3 onwards, you know, games are modern enough that you can easily enough pick them up and play them. And then if you go back, obviously, to the older generations for the NES, the SNES, the Mega Drive, those earlier generations, they're very different. So it's, yeah, you know what I mean? It's not as jarring to pick them up. You know, they're generally 2D games, side-scrolling, that kind of thing. But I think when you look at the 3D games that kind of came from, as I said, that PS1, PS2 eras, it's very, very hard to play them. It's just... There's something jarring in your mind when you try to play them. Mm. And I've had that with a few kind of older games. And I mean, really, I mean, KOTOR came out in 2003. If we predict that this game's coming in 2023, that's a 20-year gap. A lot changes in 20 years. So I think this is very much a justified remake. And I'm pretty confident that Aspyr will put their own stamp on it that will really make it their own project.
Yeah, I didn't realize they were taken from both games, so that that's interesting to know. Excuse me. But yeah, that's interesting to know. And it'll be interesting to see how they, I don't want to spoil it because now people actually have a reason to play it. I've finished one, I didn't play two, but the story is great, and there's twists and turns and stuff like that, so it'll be interesting to see how they modernise that, because we've seen with stuff like Final Fantasy VII Remake, they didn't just clone the story, did they? I've seen the twist and turn, but yeah, keeping other characters alive and stuff like that, but hey ho, it'll be interesting to see what they do. Next up there was Project Eve, Carl, and I had to Google to remind myself, but this is the JRPG action game with the chainsaw, I'm going to call them chainsaw dogs.
Yeah, I mean, it was certainly an eye-catching presentation. I mean, at first I thought this was a new announcement, but having looked into it, this game was first announced a couple of years ago, but it's kind of re-emerged now, let's say. I mean, It gave me vibes of Bayonetta. It felt very much like a platinum game. I was surprised when it wasn't a platinum game, although also relieved, because I honestly thought, oh my god, this is platinum. And I said, they're taking on way too many projects. You know, maybe release Bayonetta 3 and Babylon's Fall before you announce something else. So I was happy when it wasn't then, but it definitely seems to have, you know, their influence there. I mean, Shift Up are a Korean developer, which isn't something you see every day. But yeah, it's very, very distinct. As you alluded to, the enemy designs are quite striking, which, you know, to some people alone would be a selling point. Some people just love enemy design, particularly when it's, you know, monsters and the like. They're obsessed with that kind of thing. So I think this one would be very eye-catching for a lot of people that are into that. I mean, I like a good action game myself. So it's definitely one that I'll be keeping an eye on. I mean, I heard on another podcast someone alluded to, you know, an era when there was a lot of fan servicey games, you know, things like Lollipop Chainsaw and the like.
Mm.
And I got that vibe. The main character, she definitely was alluding some sex appeal, let's say. They're not hiding that in any sense. But yeah, no, it's a very striking game, and I'll be certainly checking it out to see more once we figure out when it's actually coming out. I mean, what were your thoughts on that one?
It looked like a Carl game to me. it looked impressive for what it is, but as well established, I think these games, there's something I'd probably give a go, but it's not something I've actively enjoyed in the past. Like, I've never sought out to play stuff like Nier Automata and stuff like that. I haven't barely played, like, what's it called? It was in my head. Do you know?
Devil May Cry?
Devil May Cry. See, we're on the same wavelength. I didn't even play stuff like that, so this might be on a level above that. But yeah, it looks impressive for what it is, but it's probably not my cup of tea. So yeah, I'd give it a go. As I always say, if this stuff goes on Game Pass, wait, is this exclusive?
No,
okay. So I'm sure I remember seeing it at E3 at some point. But yeah, it's. I'd give it a go on Game Pass at some point, but yeah. Anywho, next up, a game we saw at E3, or DLC, I should say. Wait, is it DLC or is it?
No, it's a game.
It's a game, okay.
It's a long game.
So Tiny Tina's Wonderland, obviously Gearbox. This will probably be like half a game, like the pre-sequel, I presume. But Tiny Tina, one of the more popular side characters in the Borderlands universe. Makes sense for it to get her own game. We have kind of covered this though, but yeah, it looks fun.
Yeah, no, I mean, we talked about it when it was first revealed. I mean, it does look a lot of fun, and as I said at the time, it makes a lot of sense given that it's kind of inspired by one of the more popular expansions to Borderlands 2. I mean, I'll be keeping an eye on this one. I am a Borderlands fan. I played through and completed the first two games and a few of the DLCs for Borderlands 2. I dabbled with the pre-sequel, but not for too long. But I haven't gotten a chance to get into Borderlands 3 yet. And at this point, I feel I may have missed the boat on that one. So probably won't get into it. But I mean, if the right friends were to pick up Wonderlands, I'd be tempted to get in on it, because I did quite enjoy the DLC that inspired it. So yeah, no, as you said, it looks a lot of fun.
That's always the trouble with Borderlands games. They're just built for co-op. You never want to play one on your own. So yeah, I'd probably be the same. If someone else picks it up, I'll get it as well. Next up then is Forspoken. This is the tech demo game from years back. And we all thought, well, that's a long way away, and it's not too far away now. But Forspoken, Carming, I think I described it to you as that word looks meant the people look potatoey.
Yeah, there was a couple questionable character designs, let's say. But I mean, for the most part, I mean, I'm all in on this one. I mean, obviously Luminous Productions are developing it. I was a big fan of Final Fantasy 15, put well over 100 hours into that. And then Gary Whitta and Amy Hennig, Gary Whitta being famous for co-writing Rogue One, and Amy Hennig being famous for having written some of the earlier Uncharted games, among a lot of other video games over the years. So, I mean, it's kind of a riding dream team. It's a fantasy based game. You know, it's a great development team in my opinion. So I think all the
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Pieces fit together for what should hopefully be a great title. And it looks, for the most part, really good to me. And you said it's surprising it's so close. Spring 2022. I would have expected holiday 2022, although we can't rule out game getting pushed back. So many of them do in this day and age. But I mean, this game to me, I know it's technically a timed exclusive, but given that that timed exclusive is for 2 years, this may as well be a platform exclusive, because I mean, if people are going to play it, they're going to play it on PlayStation. I think very few people are going to pick this up on Xbox if it comes out in 2024. And even at that, I don't know if they'd bother. I mean,
you'll
feels
forget
like
what it is by then.
Yeah, I mean, look at Final Fantasy VII Remake. That was an issue supposed to be 12 months, and it feels like Sony extended it for another 12 months. And I think Xbox people have pretty much just given up on it at this point. Unless maybe part one comes out alongside part two, day and date for Xbox, but we don't know. So, I mean, to me, I'm treating this like a full-on exclusive, and it's an exciting one. It's one of the games kind of that even before I had my PlayStation 5 that I was most excited for, and I'm still really excited for it.
Yeah, I mean, it was impressive, especially the world. I think when it got to them chatting, I was getting Mass Effect Andromeda flashbacks, and like, oh my god, that is not a human being's face. But I suppose it's still time to fix stuff like that. But I mean, the world looked good. Combat's a weird one, because it can look good, but at the same time, once you get your hands on it, it's like, it can get boring and samey quite quick, but we'll probably see that once people get their hands on it. But the world looked mighty impressive. It looked like a next-gen world, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the world seems central to the game. And it is really does seem to be its selling point. It is the most striking part of the game, because, as you said, some of the character designs not the best, but the world design is fantastic. And I mean, as well, I was fairly impressed with the voice acting as well. Seemed to stand out to me, and I think that's something you want in a game that the story is clearly so central to, given that they've gone out and gotten these big name writers. So, no, as I said, really intrigued about this one, and I'll be picking it up at some stage.
Yeah, I mean, 2025, if we're still doing the podcast, Carl, we can talk about it. Rainbow Six Extra, Christ, do we even want to talk about this?
I mean, I feel we kind of covered it at its announcement. I mean, I'm a big Rainbow Six fan. I'm intrigued by this, but I mean, I feel like I maybe have one Left 4 Dead type game in me. And, you know, it might end up being this, or it might end up being Back 4 Blood.
Yeah.
Given that Back 4 Blood is in Game Pass, that probably gives that a bit of an advantage because I can.
It's out 3 months earlier as well. Yeah.
Exactly that. So, I mean, I can jump on that with you someday and have a go, and that might just kind of sate the desire to play a Left 4 Dead type game. So this one might just be one that simply passes me by, but that it may well be a great game. It's no slight on that. And I expect it will be, given the recent successes of the Rainbow Six series. I mean, I assume it's one that you're keeping your eye on, given the multiplayer aspect.
It seems like, because it probably won't end up in Game Pass, it's probably like a Black Friday game. It's one I don't see many people picking it up for £70. But if they see it for one day for £30, they'd probably go, I'll give it a bash. That's probably how I'd view that game. Because as you say, Back 4 Blood, it's obviously a bit more, well, it is just Left 4 Dead. whereas it'll be interesting to see if this has its own Rainbow Six spin on it, but I'd rather him just make a new Rainbow Six Vegas game or whatever, or add a campaign to Siege or something like that. That's probably how I'd view this game, but I'd pick it up on Black Friday at some point, I imagine. But yeah, it's not one I'd actively look forward to, unless it like reviews 10 out of 10 and stuff like that.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I get where you're coming from.
Yeah, next up then, Alan Wake Remake. That was weird. That sounded wrong on the tongue. Alan Wake Remake. Obviously a long-standing Xbox IP. Finally making its way to PlayStation. Again, not something I don't do spooky. Is this one you probably played it in the 360 days? Is this one you played? It feels like a Carl game.
I actually didn't play it, surprisingly, which I do own it, and I had full intentions of playing it, but I just never really got the time. It just kind of passed by. So for that reason, I'm quite excited for it, because I think it came out in an era when survival horror games weren't at their strongest. I mean, off the top of my head, you had the likes of Alone in the Dark, which is terrible. You had like
stuff like Dead Rising took over, didn't they?
Yeah, but they were a lot more arcadey. They kind of lost the horror element. And similar, obviously, Resident Evil 5 and 6, but they're very much action games. And Silent Hill had a couple of titles. I think Homecoming and Downpour. I played through Homecoming. I quite liked it, but I know a lot of the fans of the series didn't. And Downpour was widely panned. So I think in an era that wasn't very strong for the genre, Alan Wake stood supreme and people absolutely loved it. And, you know, when you move outside kind of your Halo and Gears of War, Alan Wake is usually the other Xbox exclusive that people tend to refer to in regards to that era. So I think it's cool that it's finally coming to PlayStation platforms and that they'll be able to play it. And I'll probably be among the people playing it. I think as well, it's not like a full price 60-70 quid game.
Oh, that's
it's
good.
More around the 30-40 mark from what I've read. So that makes it even more enticing. So I'll be certainly giving it a go at some point. And I'm just hoping that they announced that the American Nightmare, which is kind of like a standalone expansion that was released on Xbox Live and is kind of standard there, stranded rather there, that I'm hoping that they announced that that's going to be in the package as well, which they haven't so far. I'll be, as you said, it is a Carl game, so I'll be certainly checking this one out.
Next up then we have GTA 5. Skyrim's won. They've won the battle of getting as many versions of the game out, because their 10-year anniversary is coming out before GTA's next gen update. So 1-0 Bethesda. Well, it might get delayed, but 1-0 Bethesda for now. That's my only takeaway from that, because it's GTA. It's too many versions of this game. Too long.
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much zoned out at that point. I mean, I we knew all along it was coming to PlayStation 5, and I do think if I ever decided to replay the story of GTA 5, that this would be the best way to do it, because obviously the seamless loading between the characters is going to save you a lot of time. And that was probably the one annoying thing about GTA 5, waiting a couple of minutes to switch between each one. But, you know, for now, obviously, it's not something new. It's a game I've already bought twice. You know, I own it on Xbox 360 and on PS4. So, you know, there isn't really much more we can say on this. It's GTA, and the people who are still playing GTA Online are going to be excited to play the best possible version of GTA Online. And that's all you can really say.
That's the thing. They're literally bringing out a new version to stop the 10-minute load times to get online. That's probably about it. But they'll never kill them load times. Next up, Ghostwire Tokyo, Carl game number 2? 3. Project Eve was the version.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking off air before the pod about the kind of just our general thoughts on the showcase, and we both kind of said there was a little bit of a kind of mid lull, but for me this was the one kind of exciting point in that mid lull. And this game looks really good, and I've been kind of concerned about it because obviously, as I think we covered at one point on the pod, that the director left and she's now forming her own studio. That's always a worrying sign for a game, but it seems obviously that they've nonetheless pressed forward, and that the game is looking great. Tango are a good studio. I kind of dabbled with the Evil Within in the past, and you know, obviously given their pedigree and the games they've worked on elsewhere in the past, they know horror, so it's no surprise that this game is impressive. And I mean, it's kind of weird when you're looking at, you know, Ghostwire Tokyo and Deathloop, which we'll talk about shortly, but probably won't have much to add on. It's weird, like the way these games are shown off, like the whole Bethesda aspect was not really on display, which it would have been in the past, because it feels like, you know, kind of Microsoft Bethesda are just trying to get these games out.
Mm.
And then move on to other things. So it's kind of funny in that way, looking at
I suppose that begs a question. Do you think Ghostwire will be the last Bethesda game on placed on Sony platform?
I don't want to kind of speculate on that. I'll say actually no. I don't think it will be. Given that obviously I think we saw recently the remaster of Quake came to PlayStation. I think Bethesda liked to do that, you know, kind of release some of their older games on modern platforms and give them a nice new lick of play. And I think those games will continue to come to PlayStation. But if we're looking at like kind of new AAA games, I'm going to continue to sit on the fence, because every time I lean towards no, then someone from Bethesda comes and says something that makes me think they could. Like, I mean, only recently, and I think we might have mentioned on the pod last week, when some new details for Starfield were released, you know, Bethesda Game Studios seemed to suggest, almost hint that the next Elder Scrolls game could come to PlayStation, because they just seemed to say, oh, well, Starfield is exclusive, but who knows, kind of thing. So I think I'm not even sure that Bethesda or Microsoft know for now. They just obviously know what the immediate projects are going to be exclusive.
Yeah, I think even at the time they said project by project, didn't they, really? Although that might have been hinting at stuff like Quake and Doom being not remade, but re-upped for next gen and stuff like that. But yeah, it's... it'll be interesting to see, but I think if Starfield is, I'd probably guess Elder Scrolls will be, but we'll see. Maybe it'll be like, get Sony back. We'll have a 3-year exclusivity on Bethesda games, just to spite people. But anywho, next up, Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy. We discussed this at E3. You're much more of a fan of this than I am, but you've yet to experience the Avengers games.
Yeah, I mean, as I said at the time, no reader. Now I feel like I'm more interested in this game than most people. I've seen a lot of people that I'd follow on social media and that would be comic book fans and video game fans alike, and they're dead against this game. They don't like the art style. They're not keen on a lot of the voices. But I do like the art style, and I like the voices. At least for me, obviously they're not the MCU likenesses, and they're not the voices, but they were never going to be that. I do, as I said when we talked about this back at E3, I feel they missed a trick by not making all the Guardians playable. The fact you just play as Peter, and that you kind of give orders to your other characters and can kind of call them in for like assist moves is a bit disappointing. I mean, action RPGs like the Star Ocean and Tales of series have had this kind of combat for a long time, and you can switch between your characters. So it's just pretty bizarre to me that you're seemingly stuck playing as Star-Lord. So that is a disappointment, and I think that will hold the game back somewhat. I know a friend of mine who'd be big on his comic book video games had that same opinion, that it completely put him off, to be honest, that you can't play as more than just Star-Lord. So that is a drawback, but I'm definitely intrigued by this one. I don't think I'm waiting for reviews per se, because I think even if it was bad reviews, it might still draw me in out of curiosity. But I think that this isn't a game, though, that I, despite my interest, that I would be comfortable in paying full price for, because I don't think it's going to warrant a 70 euro, 60 pound price tag.
Yeah, I'm probably with you there. I think it's weird. As I said earlier, when we talked about Avengers, I think my mate liked it more than I did, so he might pick this up because, well, 2021 has no games. So it might be, again, one you pick out of boredom, although we might get some at the end. I mean, we talked about War, Battlefield, etc. coming out, but yeah, we'll see. Next up, Vampire the Masquerade Bloodhunt. I've had to put this up on YouTube to remind myself of the gameplay. I must have zoned out at this point. It looks fun, but again, I'm not sure. What type of game? Is this PvP?
It's a battle royale.
Battle royale, okay.
Battle royale with vampires, effectively.
Right, okay. Kind of looks like old Assassin's Creed multiplayer.
Yeah, I do. I actually thought something similar myself. To be honest, you do get that.
I miss that. I like that multiplayer. I might be the only one. I mean, what did you make of this?
I mean, ever since we talked about this game before, because I think it was shown at E3, and I think it was again at Gamescom. I feel like for me, the ship has kind of sailed on Battle Royale. I know they're still massively popular. People are still playing Fortnite like crazy, PUBG, etc. I had some fun. My friends and I dabble with Fortnite, and we also played that. I can't even think. It was H1Z1.
We
played that for a few nights, and it was good crack. But that was kind of it. And then we were happy to move on. I've been interested in the Vampire the Masquerade games for a while. Obviously the second game is completely in development. Hell, at the moment I think it's going to be a timed exclusive, or maybe a full-on exclusive for Xbox whenever it does come out. But you know, obviously they kind of took the project off the original developers, and now we don't know what's going on. But I picked up the original game on GOG recently in a sale with the intention of playing it, but I haven't quite gotten there yet. But I mean, they're RPGs, and I think that seems a very good fit for Vampire the Masquerade. There's also a lot of kind of adventure games, you know, almost visual novels based on Vampire the Masquerade that, you know, are out and available. And again, that makes sense for the IP, but a battle royale just seems a bit bizarre to me. Mm-hmm. And I've heard, you know, early impressions, people like it. And, you know, given that it's Shark Mob and they're a developer that, you know, are very much enveloped in the shooter genre, I'm not surprised in that sense. But I just, you know, between, you know, my own personal fatigue with battle royale, and then also just it feeling like a weird fit for me from the outset, I just don't think this is one I could even see myself giving it a try.
Yeah, again, Game Pass Black Friday sale type game. Maybe not even a Black Friday sale. I think if it wasn't Game Pass, I might end up giving it a bash, but probably wouldn't buy it. But again, it might review really well. We'll see. Deathloop, I believe it's out tomorrow. It's reviewed really well. I think it's getting 5 out of 5, 10 out of 10. It had its own state of play, didn't it? Or it had a big part of a state of play a few months ago. It looks impressive. Obviously, you can pick it up. I'll have to wait a bloody year. But yeah, is this one you'll pick up, or will you wait for a sale or whatever, or just not asking completely?
I'll definitely pick it up at some point. I mean, as you said, the reviews are quite positive, so that's promising. And in general, I mean, I'm not surprised by that, because Arkane are an excellent studio. I'm a huge fan of Dishonored. I've waxed lyrical about that game in the past. I kind of put Dishonored 2 on the shelf and I never quite got to it. And I'd like to kind of loop back for that at some point. It's on Game Pass, the collection, so mm-hmm. I might have a go at it there. But I mean, Deathloop is a pretty intriguing idea. It's very heavy on its Dishonored influence, for one thing, and as I said, that appeals to me. But also, I like the whole timed aspect, and obviously the hints and name the loop. I mean, I think that's not quite unique. I mean, we have seen games with similar things, like, for example, Zelda, Majora's Mask in the past. But it's not something you see every day. So, you know, I am intrigued by this one. I'm not surprised it was showed in one way, because obviously it is a PlayStation exclusive, or, well, timed exclusive for 12 months. And I'm sure Sony want to hammer that home, given that Bethesda now belong to the rival. But at the same time, given how much we've seen this game, I didn't need to see any more of it. I don't know what your thoughts on that aspect are.
Yeah, I was zoned out at that stage. I think, well, before we started recording, we went, this was probably a show of three-thirds. The start was quite strong, and then the middle, it was like, holy crap, we've seen all this. Why is this here? And then, as we'll get to, the end was quite strong as well. But yeah, I think this is where I was just zoned out completely. But yeah, I think we've seen a lot of Deathloop, and as we say, it's out tomorrow or Friday, whenever the hell we release this, or Tuesday being tomorrow. But yeah, it looks good, but we've seen enough of it. Next up, Carl, a game that I struggled to Google because it kept changing to Children Amnesia instead of what it's actually called, which was annoying me whilst it was recording in the background. But yeah, Kid, do you just pronounce it Kid Amnesia, or do I Kid Amnesia? I have no idea.
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Kid Amnesia Exhibition. This is the, what band is it?
Radiohead,
that was it. Not really much shown, but it says it's coming out this year, didn't it? Is it November?
Yeah, it's coming out later this year. This seems more of an experience than a game, and it's been released to coincide with Radiohead are releasing a kind of a reissue of their albums Kid A and Amnesiac. Which obviously the name of this is kind of an amalgamation of those two. And the album, the reissue of the album is called One and the Same, and it's also going to have a third disc, which has some unreleased material. I mean, I'm a big Radiohead fan. I mean, I'd count them among some another of my favorite Carl bands. Yeah, so I'm just really intrigued by the idea of an experience based on an album. So I'll definitely download this and give it a try once it comes out. I mean, because it's not something you see every day. That said, I kind of had a chuckle at this one, because if you remember when we talked about Gamescom, there was that Deadmau5, or you want to pronounce it, kind of experience within that online world building game, which the name of it escapes me at the moment. So maybe it's the it thing to do now for bands to release visual experiences that go along with their music. Yeah, I mean, I was saying it to my girlfriend, and she said, you know, maybe it's just that with the pandemic that without being able to tour, that bands were just kind of getting experimental in what they want to do, and that makes a lot of sense when you think about it. So, yeah, no, I'll be certainly checking this one out, and much the same as I'll be checking out the album when it drops.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, the hell do I pronounce this? Tachia? Chia?
Yeah, we'll go with that. Chia.
The Moana game. It looked impressive, but again, what it was that the same as that Doki 5 game from Gamescom. We legally can't play it.
Yeah, no, I get that where you're coming from there. I mean, it's one of those games. I mean, it felt like a few years ago there was just suddenly an influx of kind of games with this kind of art style, and people really jumped on them and just loved the cutesy art approach. It's now it's kind of more, you know, these games are more common. You know, you get one of them every few months, it feels like. At first watching this, I was kind of like, meh. But then when I saw like kind of hopping around the animals, I was like, that's a really cool gameplay mechanic. And
I thought it was like Ukulele Hero at the start. I was like, what the fuck's going on here?
I mean, that aspect of gameplay seems to be very much what we were expecting from Michel Ancel, you know, formerly of the man who formerly worked at Ubisoft and then suddenly went out on his own and then suddenly just completely retired from video game development. And then his game Wild was just quietly cancelled. And Wild, you know, from what I remember reading about it when it was announced, it had a similar kind of mechanic. And we never obviously got to experience that. So it's kind of cool that we're going to get to experience it with this. So, I mean, for that mechanic alone, I'm going to be keeping an eye on this one, because
like Fable 2 flashbacks when you have to play Loot Hero.
Yeah. So, I mean, but the idea of just being able to hop across different animals, you know, be a dog one minute, a bird the next, a fish the next, kind of keeps things fresh, and, you know, it doesn't feel samey as a lot of games can be. So I'm intrigued by this one.
Yeah, it looked impressive. I will never play this game. Uncharted Legacy of Thieves Collection. Again, I was zoned out here. I what were the deals on this? Was it coming to PC? Was it just re-releasing? I was spaced to fuck here.
So it's coming to PS5 and PC, and it's a collection composed of Uncharted 4, Thieves Legacy, and Uncharted Lost Legacy. I think I might have messed up one of those titles.
4.5.
Yeah, A Thief's End. Sorry, not A Thief's Legacy. A Thief's End. Getting them mixed up there. But yeah, I mean, we kind of knew something was coming for Uncharted. We thought it was just going to be all the games coming to PC. But obviously, this is for now at least. It's just 4 and Lost Legacy. But it. It makes a lot of sense. I mean, it's funny that you can play Uncharted 1, 2, and 3 in 60 frames, whereas Uncharted 4 was stuck on 30 frames on PS4. So now, obviously, this is going to be 60 frames, and people will be able to play it. You know, they'll be, especially someone like myself, who's always wanted to kind of get into Uncharted. I did start the first one day and just never quite went back to it. But the idea now that I'd be able to jump into the collection, which have been kind of enhanced, and then obviously the fourth game and play them all in 60 frames, it'd make a lot more sense. So, you know, on a personal level, I'm grateful that this is coming out. It'll be a bit odd if they don't announce the first three games for the PC, though, because the idea of just 4 and 4 and a bit. I mean, I gather from people who have played these games that you wouldn't really be, you know, it wouldn't make sense to play the fourth game unless you played the previous titles. Well, I mean, yeah, what are your thoughts on that?
That's my experience, so yeah. I've already played 4 and I was kind of like, I don't care about any of these people. So yeah, I think it's obviously an impressive game, but I think to fully care about it, you would want to play 1 to 3. So yeah, I think, I don't know, just pick up a PlayStation. I imagine most PC people have one of the consoles somewhere, and most people have a PlayStation over an Xbox, so play it on there or wait or whatever. But yeah, you probably won't appreciate Uncharted if you just play Uncharted 4. That's probably what I'd say.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. I mean, I think you'd want to be getting on the first three games to start, but I'm still expecting them to be announced.
Yeah,
for
it makes sense.
Down the road, I'd be very surprised if they're not.
Seems like easy money, if anything. Next up, then, probably the actual biggest surprise of the show, and that is Marvel Wolverine being made by Insomniac Games. This annoys me. Because it won't be coming to Xbox. But I presume Disney, or Lucas, not Lucas, Disney just saw, well, they made Spider-Man amazingly. Why not do it with another superhero? So I'm guessing that's why this will be exclusive, but considering the job Insomniac's done with Spider-Man, I can't really blame them, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny with this one. As I started watching the showcase, I was texting my girlfriend, and she texted me and was like, oh, did you see this Wolverine game that's coming out? And I was like, no. And I was like, but why didn't I see this on social media? Because I was watching the showcase a couple hours after it aired. And I then copped on, oh, clearly she's spoiled it here, one of the surprise announcements. But, I mean, I didn't even, at first when she said it, I didn't even contemplate that it could be from this, because I wouldn't have expected for a minute that they'd get another exclusive Marvel game. I mean, Spider-Man makes a lot of sense, given that Sony obviously owned the film rights for... Yeah. Spider-Man, and mm-hmm. they've played nice with those as far as allowing Spider-Man into the MCU, and that's probably been what has greased the wheels for the Spider-Man games that have been exclusive to PlayStation platforms. And there was, of course, also Iron Man VR, which is exclusive to PlayStation VR. It's not on kind of Oculus or Vive or any of the others. But again, you could kind of pass that off as well. It's a VR title. It's not a huge deal. But I wouldn't have expected them to get any other exclusive titles. So when my girlfriend first texted me, I was like, oh, I must have just missed this. But, you know, I expected it was going to be like a cross-platform game. But it's not. And, yeah, I mean, that's crazy, because with this game and another game that we'll come on to shortly, that means that Sony are going to have had 5 exclusive Marvel games, and that's crazy to me.
That's zero. Bullshit.
It seems unheard of. I mean, what are your thoughts, you know, looking at it as a primary Xbox gamer?
Fucking Indiana Jones better be fucking exclusive. As I said, it makes sense in terms of making a quality game, but You're just kind of pissing off half the gaming sphere. Obviously, they'll have some sort of deal with Sony. Maybe it was an extension of the Spider-Man character being available to Disney that they get a pick of another hero or something for a game. But yeah, it's kind of annoying. And I need Microsoft to either buy... They won't even get fucking exclusive to the DC universe, but we need some exclusive shit with DC, just despite Disney. But yeah, it makes sense for them to deal with Insomniac, but at the same time, you're limiting yourself to, a quarter of the game? I know the PlayStation market's more than a quarter, but there's three other platforms it could go on. And that's kind of annoying. I'll pick it up on PlayStation, but it fucking annoys me.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, my initial thought was shock, because I just couldn't understand why Marvel would give them another game. But yet, obviously Sony are just very good at leveraging that Spider-Man film character. But I mean, clearly the game is a ways off. You know, it's a different team to the Spider-Man team. So obviously they can be working on the game side by side, and I'd be surprised if the games don't share an engine. But that said, I do think they've made it clear Wolverine's coming after Spider-Man 2, which we'll come on to in a moment.
Yeah.
Spider-Man 2 is confirmed for 2023, so we can expect maybe 2024 for Wolverine. So we do have a while to wait, but I'm sure it will be worth the wait. Just one talking point on it, which I've seen a few people raise online, is some are a little disappointed that, you know, Insomniac seem tied in to Marvel games at the moment. While they love the Insomniac Marvel games, some people would like to see maybe a new IP or maybe a follow-up to Sunset Overdrive. Do you think maybe Sony are tying Insomniac's hands somewhat here?
Possibly, but as we say, I think they have four teams now. Obviously, one's Ratchet and Clank, one's Spider-Man, one's Wolverine, and we don't know what the third is. So maybe the third's doing Sunset Overdrive, because they recopyrighted the name, or whatever the hell the right
phrase
is.
Yeah, they did renew the trademark, yeah.
Renew, that's the one. But yeah, it probably, not locking it in, but I mean, Marvel's money, isn't it? Everyone likes money. But yeah, I think you'd like to see them do more, but at the same time, Spider-Man must be, like, they are the perfect studio for Spider-Man, but wait and see with Wolverine. But, well, Insomniac doesn't make bad games anymore. Or never have, probably. But yeah, it is a concern, but I'd imagine one of the teams, maybe you move the Ratchet and Clank team off that and put it on someone else or something else like that, but it wouldn't surprise me if there's a Sunset Overdrive game in the next few years, or, I don't know, remake it so it's on PlayStation or whatever.
Yeah. I do think it's certainly something on the table, and I think obviously to jump back to, you know, we were talking about Alan Wake before, that the fact that that's found its way to PlayStation now would suggest to me that the first Sunset Overdrive can at some point and likely will. As the Marvel fanboy, I'm not disappointed at all that Insomniac is working on two Marvel games, because they've made the best Marvel games in recent years. And, you know, some might argue the only worthwhile Marvel games in recent years, although, you know, Ultimate Alliance 3 wasn't a bad game in any sense of the word. But obviously I have to kind of hold my hands up and say that's my bias. So I suppose other people, it's a valid point if they feel that they'd like to see more from Insomniac. And I mean, sticking with Insomniac and Marvel games, we may as well skip over a game and come back to it and just talk about Spider-Man 2 now. I mean, again, it's 2023. It's 2 years away. We didn't see any gameplay or anything. We don't know too much about it. But I think two things that stuck out to me. One, Venom seems to be the focus as far as a villain goes. Mm-hmm. And two, it features both Peter Parker Spider-Man and Miles Morales Spider-Man. And a lot of people have taken that as a suggestion that this game's going to be co-op, which is mind-blowing when you think about it. I mean, it's very ambitious to put a game in which you could travel so fast and far. To make a co-op is crazy to me. I mean, what are your thoughts on that? Do you think it will be co-op? Do people are reading too much into things?
Obviously, it's too early to tell, but I'd hazard a guess that it'll be, like, situational. Like later Arkham games, when you swap to Nightwing occasionally and you swap to Catwoman occasionally. I think it'll be, like, part of the story. Peter Parker's been kidnapped. You'll have to play his thingy. And vice versa. I think it'll be like that, where you... Maybe you can pick and experience the campaign differently, but I think it'll be certain situations for certain characters, I think. I could see a world where it'd be multiplayer and it'd be excellent, but at the same time, big single-player experience like this, I think it suits being a single-player experience. You know what I mean? Like, you don't want to tag along with someone. I feel like you could add on a mode, but not a campaign where it's multiplayer.
That's exactly what I was going to jump in with. You know, I think what you're saying makes a lot of sense. I mean, like the Arkham games, just the kind of ability to play at different characters at different points. That could be well the way they approach it. But I think maybe there'll be some kind of multiplayer. And I hope it wouldn't be just like the Arkham one was with, you know, I think one of the Arkham games had where you could kind of just fight waves of enemies. I don't want kind of like a horde mode. But if there was even like kind of maybe episodic co-op levels, you know, kind of that had their own little story, you know, I'm not expecting to go into the same detail they would for the main campaign, but, you know, just a handful of episodic, kind of more contained co-op missions, that would be pretty cool. And something I'd certainly jump into myself. I mean, but all in all, you know, it might be 2 years away, but I'm already super hyped for this game, because I still think that the first Insomniac Spider-Man is one of, if not my favorite exclusive from last gen. So I'm feeling this may be my a contender for my favorite exclusive from this gen, although Wolverine will probably push it in that sense.
That's true. I mean, maybe the last game will probably be mine. Gran Turismo. I made that sound like Gran Turismo 7 is going to be my favourite. It's not. The next one will be. But Gran Turismo 7 was the game we skipped over there because it's a racing car game, and this looked like Gran Turismo Horizon 7 to me. It's a racing game. It looks fantastic. If you like racing games, you'll like this. That's pretty much all we need to say, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously they revealed the release date, March 4th. So it's coming out in the spring alongside Horizon. So that's two big games for PlayStation. I mean, it was a great trailer, and if you like your racing games, you probably had your mouth watering at that point. And you know, neither of us are really racing game players, so I don't think we could do it any justice by discussing it. And so for that reason, we'll kind of just gloss over it and jump on to the last game, I feel.
Yep, absolutely. Last game then, God of War Ragnarok. We kind of knew it would be there, or expected it to be there. It looked fantastic. The world looked grander. New characters, we get to see bits and bobs of Thor. We obviously got to see the character model in little posters and vignettes and stuff like that. It looks fantastic. It looks like it's built on the first one so much. Weird people are criticising it, saying it's using the same animation for him getting a boat and shit like that. This game is going to be fucking phenomenal, and I can't wait for it. And I'm going to buy fucking 400-odd quid console just to play this game. And then it'll gather dust till Spider-Man comes out. And that's how it's going to go down. It's going to be phenomenal this game. And the trailer looks fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, we got to see a lot, which was what we want to see, because obviously last we saw this game was just a logo. I mean, as you said, there's a lot of new characters, there's a lot of new settings, and they confirmed afterwards that you will be able to visit all the realms in this game. Obviously, some of them we could only see on the board, but they weren't accessible. So that's pretty cool that we get to go everywhere. I mean, it just looks like we're getting more the same, but it looks even prettier. And that's all I wanted. I mean, I loved God of War. I mean, if there's one contender with Spider-Man for my favorite exclusive of that generation, it is God of War 2018. So I just can't wait for this one. I hope we don't have to wait too long. We didn't get a release date yet. I guess maybe Sony are skeptical of giving release dates too far off now, given what happened with Horizon being pushed back. But it looked like there was a lot for them to show, which makes me think that this game's reasonably far along. So I'd be confident maybe this time next year that we could see it. What do you think on that?
Yeah, I'd think Q3, Q4, 2022 for it to be released. Because Horizon's March. They do a summer game, though, don't they? But not a big summer. Normally it's, I'll say, B-type exclusive, but that's not always the case. But I'd guess, like, October next year.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. In you know, the fall seems like a good fit. So as I said, I'm hopeful we won't have to wait too long. And I mean, I don't think we can do just how excited we are for this one. I mean, just go back and listen to our review of the first game if you haven't already, and I think that will tell you all you need to know. Yes. I mean, this is just it's fantastic, and you know that we. I just can't wait.
It's making me spend 400 odd quid on a game. You know, that's all the praise it needs. I will not play this on PlayStation 4. It'll disgust me. I will buy a new one for this. Yeah. So that's it. I mean, the only question is, what was your favourite game of the announcement of the show? It wasn't even a showcase, whatever the hell it was, of the show.
I'd say Wolverine, just because putting aside the spoiler for my girlfriend, I think it was the most surprising, because it's just something I couldn't have seen happening. Like, I just did not expect that they'd get another Marvel game as an exclusive. What about you?
From what was actually shown at the thing, I'd say God of War. The best news for me is that Star Wars was only a timed exclusive. yeah, I think God of War and Star Wars are probably my favourite ones, because, well, God of War looks fantastic, and I wasn't expecting Star Wars to be there, even though it annoys me it's a timed exclusive.
Solid choice. I mean, was there anything that you were surprised wasn't here?
Maybe not stuff by name, but we were expecting, like, Sony Ben to be there, weren't we? Or did something new and The Last of Us couple things?
Yeah, I mean, I think with Ben, I personally wouldn't have been expecting anything then, given that obviously what we heard happened with them recently, yeah, with being true. On an Uncharted game and getting taken off, and now they're working on a new IP, so that's probably a bit far off. But as you said, I think Naughty Dog being there with an Uncharted remaster was one thing, but I think a lot of people were expecting Factions to be there. So it's a real surprise that wasn't shown off. And the other thing that really stood out for me was the lack of Blue Point. I mean, we thought that was a banker, that Blue Point would be there with their next title, and that Sony wouldn't, alongside that, announce the acquisition of Blue Point, which everyone feels is inevitable. So that was a real shock to me. I mean, outside that, though, I personally wasn't expecting any of the other studios to be there, because I feel a few of the studios are most likely to be working on something VR related. So given that they said PSVR 2 wouldn't be part of this showcase, it makes sense not to include them, because whenever they decide to have a big PSVR 2 blowout, those studios, you know, Sony London, Team Asobi, that's when I think they'll show what they're working on next. But those two particularly, Naughty Dog with Factions and Bluepoint with whatever they're working on, be that a Metal Gear Solid remake as rumored, they surprised me.
Yeah, that's a good point. That is a good point. But overall, as we said at the start, it was a good show. Bit of a boring middle bit, but the start and end were fantastic, and it'll be interesting to see how the news develops this. And we'll probably see gameplay for stuff like Spider-Man, especially next year, maybe Wolverine, see a bit more. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how all this stuff develops. But I mean, to finish up, we haven't gone long, we've just gone standard amount of time. You played anything new in the last week or so?
Yeah, so I dabbled with Splitgate based on your recommendation. I texted you during the week when I was playing it. Yeah, it's really enjoyable. Very much screams Halo. A couple differences. I mean, it's quite striking that there's no proper grenades. There are the grenades that close portals, but there's no grenades for killing people. And obviously, grenades are a big part of combat in Halo. And it also feels that people are quite squishy. Like, people die quite quickly. Mm. I mean, I obviously, there's a true skill thing going on in the background, so I was getting put against weaker players because there was a new player, but I actually did quite well. I think I won both my games. I came top. I think I had the best kill death ratio in the first game, and then I had the most kills in the second game, I was never great at first person shooters, but I haven't played much multiplayer in a long time, so I was expecting to go on and get my ass handed to me, but it was quite striking to me how you could just get a couple of shots off on someone and they were dead. And I know a few people aren't that keen on that. That's been one criticism for some people, particularly Halo fans, but all in all, I think it's a solid ode to Halo, and I think it's enjoyable. And I can see why a lot of people, including yourself, have been playing it. Outside that, I just kind of been continuing on with a few games I've been jumping in and out of. Currently playing the official Ghostbusters game. You know, the game that's kind of the unofficial Ghostbusters 3. Involved, like, obviously some of the writers from the movie. It's good if you like Ghostbusters. I mean, it's not an amazing game, but there's the story's fun, you know, as you'd expect from Ghostbusters. And other than that, just my usual Final Fantasy 14. How about you? What have you been playing lately?
A couple of things. I'm still playing Hades, fantastic game. Planning on 100%ing that, which be my first 100%ing maybe since Oblivion. I'm not an achievement whore, but this one is good. So Hades, I'll be hopefully continuing with that. Overwatch went back on the other day. Still a fantastic game. Please release the sequel soon. Also went back on Grounded, Carl, which we played together. There's now fish in it, and they're scary. They will fuck you up.
Yeah. I always meant to kind of just jump into it one day and try it again, just see, because it felt very much like a game in early beta when we played.
Yeah.
It kind of screamed at points. You just kind of felt like you were hitting invisible walls, and it was kind of screaming at you, come back later and this will be a thing. And so for that reason, I think that's why I didn't play too much at the time, because it just felt like an incomplete game. But there was it's a great idea there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think when we played, I think we literally played it like the first day or week or something, didn't we? And it was like, you can only do this to a certain point. It was like, Well, fuck you then. But now it seems like it is literally just a big open, well, not big, because you're small, but like a pretty much you've just got a big ass garden to do what you want in, really, and not really much limitations. Obviously, you can always add more stuff in, but I've never been that scared of a fish in my life. Because it was chasing me. But yeah, it's still there. Spiders are terrifying. They've got grasshoppers now that are arseholes. Not grasshoppers, mosquitoes. They're arseholes. And there is like bees that are menacingly just flying above you, and they've not attacked me yet. So I'm kind of scared of them. But yeah, it's improved a lot from where we played it. So yeah, I'll be looking forward to playing that a bit more. And that's it. That is it for this week. We'll probably be back next week. We have the THQ thing to review, which if you didn't hear last week's show, we kind of previewed that and the Sony show. So just skip about a bit and you'll be able to find the THQ bit. But yeah, we'll be back to review that hopefully sometime. Splitter's news in there and I'll go wild. But yeah, that's it. Thank you, everyone. Goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.